Hi, everyone. I'm a bit humbled to try to fit bronze shoes, like Rabbi Vichman said. But Rabbi Braun asked me, Rabbi Vichman asked me, so let's try to learn a mimer together. Do you have the copies? Oh, copies are over here. So I know this is more meant to be a lecture, but I want to pass them around. Thank you. This is a mimer from Lakuta Torah Parshas Bamidbar. Lakuta Torah Parshas Bamidbar, the Alter Rebbe has a lot of memorim about Matan Torah, simply because Parshas Bamidbar is always the week that Shavuos time. So a lot of memorim that are actually on our weekly parsha could be found in Lakuta Torah Parshas Bamidbar. Over here, this mimer is over there, Lakuta Torah Parshas Bamidbar, and I chose this mimer because, in my humble opinion, this mimer is a very, very essential mimer to understand one of the very basics of Chassidus, and mainly not only Chassidic philosophy, which we call Askola, more Chassidic conduct, which we call Avoida. In this mimer, the Alter Rebbe is going to talk about a concept that is known also for people that don't learn Chassidus. In fact, in most Hebrew schools, this is one of the concepts that is always mentioned. And that's what's so beautiful over here in this mimer, that the Alter Rebbe is taking a pretty famous concept, a concept that is known for almost everyone that ever learned these things, and then he's going to give us the Hasidic touch, the Hasidic perspective on that. So let's first see the concept, and let's then see how we would have understood it without Chassidus, and how Chassidus comes and sheds that unbelievable light of Chassidus and changes the whole thing into a much deeper perspective, into a much deeper concept. So let's start inside. Inyan shenitna ha-toira al har Sinai davke v'loy al har tover v'chermoin v'karmel shabo gamken shetinosna ha-toira aleya. The Inyan, why the Torah was given at Mount Sinai and not on the mountain that is called Tavor. Yeah, anyone knows where the Tavor mountain is? Tavor mountain is in Emek Yisrael, it's next to Afula over there, that area. Hermon, huge mountain in the Golan, yeah, where the skiing goes on. And Carmel is the big mountain in Haifa. Shebo gamkein shetinos na'tayra aleim, they also came and asked Hashem that the Torah should be given of them. So why didn't the Eibishter give them the Torah? So he says, "Kmo shekasu b'targum yonis and b'shoyktim simin hey al pasuk harim nozlu u'b'tehillim." Yeah, back in the day they used to write tehillim in the short without the hey. Tehillim simin samaches al pasuk lama teradzun. Says targum yonisin, the famous answer that the Eibershah said, "Leis rafsi, I don't have the will lemeita meraita to give the Torah al turaya giyusnin mevasranaya." On haughty, boasting mountains. David says, I don't want to give the Torah on haughty, arrogant mountains. Ha Tur Sinai, over here I have the mountain of Sinai, the Machich, which is low, which is humble. That's where I want to give the Torah. So without learning Chassidus, the concept is very simple. David wants us to be moral people. David wants us to be well-mannered, self-improved people, people that are not animals, people that know how to work on themselves. And one of the very important things that before the Eibishter gives the Torah, the Eibishter wants us to teach us a lesson, and the lesson is humility. And that's why the Eibishter gave the Torah on a small mountain instead of all these humongous big mountains. But now let's see how Chassidus takes a whole different take on it. The Hainu says the Alter Rebbe, "Sheinyan hagavus shel tover v'chermon." The concept of the height, yeah, the fact that the mountain is so big, zehu inyan hagadlus. This is the concept of greatness. Shemagbia et atmoi begasus. The Alter Rebbe over here uses a word which we're going to see in a few minutes. We're going to see that this is a very big Chassidish novelty. This is a big Chiddush in Chassidus that the Alter Rebbe calls over here gavus, which is being inflated, being big, or being gadlus, right, being arrogant. He calls it with the word gasus. It's a bit hard to find a good translation for the word gasus, but if you want to try, gasus is being callous, being coarse, crass. Gasus is not so similar to the concept of arrogance, and we're going to talk about the difference between the two, but gasus simply means someone that is heavy, someone that is very, very felt. There are certain people, when they walk into the room, and it doesn't matter what they do, you right away, they're very, very felt. There are certain people that they come in, they could do the same thing, and no one would even realize. But then there are certain people, everything they do is like with a whole commotion, even without them talking, even without them opening their mouth. It almost looks like they're feeling that they're on the stage. Yeah? They are doing something now. And it's so felt that everybody realizes it, everybody feels it. There's a lot of noise around it. The gasus. That's the concept of gasus. Say callous, crass. I don't have the right word, yeah? I'm from Borough Park, so my English is not so so developed, but you know, some people in Hebrew you would call it mesurbal. I'm looking for a good word for that. You know, like the grizzly bear when he walks. Like even if he walks quietly, like it's full of there's a full what? What? Which word?
Boisterous, like very loud, very big, heavy presence.
Oh, big, heavy presence. How do you call it? Boisterous. Oh, fine. So I hope that this is the right word. Yeah, so you taught me something. Vagasus and the gasus. Yeah, thank you, really. Vagasus, says the Alter Rebbe, and gasus, who shoyrish kol hara. Over here comes another interesting concept that I want to discuss a bit more in length. And the gasus, this boisterousness, yeah? Who shoyrish kol hara, that is the mother of all evil. The source of all the evil, ukanoida, as it's known, the Indian shvira sakelim, from the concept of shvira sakelim, the ikir ha-toira, who liyoiz bebchinas bittel, the main point of the Torah is to be in a level of bittel, the lois chalalu, and you shall not disgrace, ukamosh chulu, ukamosh chosav, ukamadichti. Kamaduchti. The Alter Rebbe says over here a few things that we need to try to understand a bit better. Why does the Alter Rebbe call it gasus? First of all, why can't you call it gaiva, gavus? And then, why is that the root of all evil? And then he brings over here a concept of shvira sakelim, and then he puts in a word, v'lois chalalu. Yeah, what is the connection between being haughty, being full of yourself, and the concept of do not disgrace God's name? So there's something very interesting if you read the history of Chassidus. Yeah, and in the beginning when I started learning Chassidus, I was very, very interested in all these literature, because when I started learning Chassidus, I was really very, I was completely conquered by Chassidus. I found out about Chassidus and I was crazy about it for a few years. So I loved it to pieces. It was very something that affected me very, very deeply. But on the other hand, like one of the things that any intellectual person thinks, not that I'm a big intellectual, but anyone that is thinking, what are the people that are against Chassidus? What do they think? Yeah, what's their problem with Chassidus? So that was also one thing that occupied my mind a bit, to try to understand what do the other people think, and like that, I came across a book called Beis Yaakov. And that book, that's a book, it's a history book, written by the secretary of a big Lithuanian leader, named Rabbi Yitzchok Elchanan of Kovna. And in that book, he has one of the chapters about the Hasidic movement. And I realized something very interesting over there. In general, I'm a big fan of listening to the other complaints. The opposite. If you know what other people have against you, so even though that you know that they're not right, maybe, and you have the good answer, but at least you could learn so much from understanding the other, from seeing the other perspective. So one of the things that he writes over there against Chassidus, which I found very, very fascinating and interesting, and I really thought that I need to find an answer for that. He says, and that's the history book. Obviously, the person is a bit biased, but I think that he does make a very, very fair, he really tries to be as objective as possible over there in that book. And he comes over and he says, he has a lot of complaints over there about Chassidus. But one of the things that he comes over and says over there, he says, I don't understand, why did you guys have to change everything? Everything, what was wrong the way it was till now, everything you have to change around? And one of the examples that he uses over there is this concept. He says, before Chassidus came along, what were the concepts that people were talking in Musar classes? People that were working on themselves. They would talk about the concept of Gaiva versus Anava. Gaiva is translated in English as arrogance. Anava is translated in English as humility. So, in all those classes, Gaiva, arrogance, was something that was bashed by the teachers, that was put down, and being humble is something that was praised. You came along, and right away you have to change everything. No more Gaiva and Anava out of the window. Now we have a whole new concept. It's called Yeshus versus Bittel. What was wrong with the old concept? Why did you have to change it? Yeah, how to say in English? If it ain't broken, don't fix it. Yeah? Why in the world do you have to change that? And over here comes a very, very important point. And when you think about it, they have a point. They're saying something. But, obviously, they're not getting the reason why Chassidus actually had to change it. What is the difference between Gaiva versus Anava? Yeah? Arrogance versus humility, and the concept of Yeshus versus Bittel. Yeshus is a very hard word to translate. But the word Yesh means existence. Is. Yeah? Yeshus means where I feel my existence. Bittel means nullification. Nullification means when I don't feel my existence. What is the difference between arrogance versus humility and Yeshus? Feeling myself and not feeling myself. Chassidus comes and says that also arrogance and also humility could both be a part of Yeshus. Could both be a part of feeling myself. Why? What is the difference between arrogance and humility? Arrogance and humility are simply two dispositions, two types of ways that people could conduct themselves. Certain people constantly have to be in the spotlight. Certain people constantly have to talk about themselves. Yeah, how does the joke go? A guy goes out on a date, and after 2 hours of him talking about himself, he says, okay, enough of me talking about myself. Now let me hear what you think about me. Yeah? So there's a certain type of a person that constantly has to be talking about themselves. Everybody has to be talking about themselves. Everybody has to know every detail about them. It's a certain type of a person. Then there are certain people that are more... They don't like, they're very, very big people, right? People that are real fighters and go-getters, but they don't like to be in the spotlight. They like to do things behind the curtain. They like to pull the right strings, but they don't need headlines. When they come into a simcha, they don't necessarily want to be at the head table. They would prefer, they say that at the head table, because there's so much photographers and video taking, you really can't eat so comfortably, right? Because every move that you do, you're on the candid camera, right? So some people prefer sitting over there in the back. But it's two types of people that both could very much be very stuck in themselves. Only what? One expresses it by wanting constantly to be in the headlines. One doesn't need that. Chassidus comes and says a whole new concept. And let's try to understand why Chassidus comes and says a whole new concept. Chassidus is not only a collection of very nice, brilliant concepts. Chassidus has one major point, and all the details in Chassidus are connected to that idea. What is the difference between Musar and Chassidus when it comes to self-improvement, to working on yourself? Musar believes very much in a person becoming a better person, a person working on themselves, yeah, to the extent that the Bali Musar actually use a Ramban. They quote a Ramban constantly. The Ramban says that the whole Torah, God gave the whole Torah, in order to make the human race, to make them letzaref. How to say letzaref in English? To perfect them, to make them better. That's the whole point of the Torah. And according to Musar, it definitely has a source in Judaism. God forbid, no one would say that Musar is not true. Musar is true, and it's a part of Yiddishkeit. The whole Pirkei Avos is very based on that concept, on how a person could perfect themselves and become a better person. So when you deal with how you want to become a better person, so then you deal with the concept, are you arrogant versus humility? And in fact, if you learn Musar, you'll see in Musar that there's other middos as well. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the founder of the modern Musar movement, means say the Musar movement as we know it for the last 150 or 180 years, said that there's 13 things that a person has to work on. There is arrogance is one of them, and then there's another one which is being stingy, being angry, being jealous, being lazy. There are 13 concepts that a person has to work on in order to be a mensch. And the Eishon wants you to be a mensch. Comes Chassidus, and Chassidus says a whole new concept. Chassidus says that the point is not to perfect the person in you. It's to call it in very, very strong Chassidic terms. If anyone learned Tanya, so we know that Tanya says that there's a Nefesh HaBahamis and there's a Nefesh HaLikis. The Nefesh HaBahamis is our human part, yeah, which is like the name, and then we have the Nefesh HaLikis. This is our part that is connected to the Eibush, that is connected to the divine, and actually has the divine perspective on the world of Yehud Eloh, Yehud Tata, the concept of unity of God, the concept that there's nothing but God. That perspective is the part of us that is our Nefesh HaLikis that has it. Chassidus came along and said that the point of serving Hashem is not to perfect the behemah, not to perfect the animal. Chassidus perceives the perfection of the behemah, you're simply taking the animal and you're making it a nice animal. You take an animal, you clean him up, you put on him a nice tie, you put in polished shoes, but it's still an animal. Chassidus says that the task of a Jew is not only to become a better person, but rather stop being that finite person and become that divine soul. In other words, let go of your animal, and what is the main thing that you need to try to do? Become your divine soul. Be in touch with your divine soul. Live the life of your divine soul. And that is the reason why when it comes to Avodas HaMidos, obviously Chassidus talks about Midos. Anyone that reads the letters of the Friedige Rebbe or the Likutei Diburim or all the things that talk about Chassidus HaBrengens and Chassidus HaHashpa and Chassidus HaHanhaga knows that a Chassid acts a certain way. Anyone that thinks that a Chassid could act the way like an animal in the name of Chassidus is, in my humble opinion, is like missing the point. Obviously, there is a concept of Chassidus HaMidos, of a Chassidus HaEdelkeit. Edelkeit means a certain a refinement. But Chassidus didn't put an emphasis on the Midos. Why didn't Chassidus put an emphasis on the Midos? Because Chassidus believed that instead of dealing with individual Midos, there is one issue that you have to deal with. What is that issue? The issue is called yeshus. What does yeshus mean? Yeshus means that I feel myself. Bittul means when I stop feeling myself and I start living and feeling something that is beyond me, which in this case is the divine intention of creation, the divine perspective on creation, and so on and so forth. Chassidus learned from the war tactics of Napoleon. I heard once that Napoleon, he was a brilliant strategist, and the way, one of the ideas that he brought to the world of wars and strategies was that before him, the way to conquer a country was people, the army would come and they would march into a country and they would fight every post or every resistance. They would fight it and fight it and fight it until they would conquer it. Once they conquered it, you go to the next post. And like this, you conquer another territory, another territory, another territory, until you conquer a whole country, a whole state. Napoleon came and said, and he started a whole new strategy. He said, why in the world are we wasting so much energy on fighting every post? You just walk into a country and you conquer a huge area. Now, even if you have pockets of resistance in the territory in between, I don't care about it. They will cave in automatically. What could they do? They're already surrounded anyways with the territory that was already conquered. Chassidus believed that instead of dealing with all those issues, yeah, all those individual issues of stinginess, of anger, of laziness, all these concepts are very, very important concepts, and no one could say that a chassid could walk around angry. Chas v'sholom. It says in Kizvei Arizal, the Arizal says that a person that becomes angry loses their soul, and they get a new soul of a lower level. Yeah, the Alter Rebbe talks about anger in chapter 23, I think, in Tanya. Yeah, or chapter 24. Yeah, where is it? 23 or 24? No, not 29. Either 23 or 24. Yeah? How it's compared to idol worship. God forbid to say that a chassid is allowed to get angry. Chas v'sholom. But Chassidus comes and says, instead of me dealing with every detail, I once heard that in one of the introductions to one of the Musar books, yeah, I'm not saying it in order to make fun, Chas v'sholom. I want you to understand the contrast, that even though nowadays it might look a bit funny, but in one of the introductions to the Musar books, the author over there writes that he has worked, the Mishnah and others says that you should greet people with a nice face. Yeah? Which is very important. A person who walks into a new place where you are over there, it's your yeshiva, you're learning over here. Someone walks in, people automatically don't feel comfortable when they walk into a new place. Right? So therefore, the Mishnah and others, yeah, and the ethics of our fathers, the Mishnah says, V'havim mekabel kol odom b'sefer panim yafes. Greet people with a nice smile. Make them feel welcome. So one of the introductions to one of the Musar books, he writes over there that he worked on his smile for 2 years with a mirror in order to make sure that he has a pleasant smile, that when he greets a person, that person feels comfortable. Okay. But I want you to understand, these were people that really worked on themselves. It's not a joke. But comes Chassidus and says, Chevra, instead of you working on your stinginess, on your anger, and on your laziness, there's one thing that you have to change over here. Am I living my own ego, or am I living a divine purpose? If I live a divine purpose, if I live something that is beyond me, automatically I'll also not become angry, I'll also not be lazy, and also won't be stingy. There's a major difference if you work very strong on training yourself to give to that next poor person that is going to ask you for money. You're going to work on yourself to make a smile and put your hand into your pocket and take out the shekel and give it to them. Or you tell yourself, hello, listen, you're not an animal anymore. From now on, you are one with Hashem. And you do what Hashem wants. Imagine, guys, if I would want to buy a robot, want to buy a robot. My company wants automation. I want to try to save money. I want to invest in a robot. And I start shopping for a robot like a good Jew. I go shopping a few places where I can get the best price. And I come to one place and they ask me, how many functions do you want the robot to do? It says, oh, I want the robot to do 50 functions. Which functions? Start taking a whole list. And you check with the programmers, how long will it take? And they say, okay, we'll cost $10,000, I don't know how much, and come back in 3 months, and we're going to program this robot. And this robot, when someone's going to knock on the door, they'll go to the door and open it up and say hello. When the phone will ring, they'll pick up the phone. When something is on the floor, they'll pick it up. We'll train the robot all these 50 functions perfectly. Then he goes to a different place, and they say, no problem, you want it? $10,000. When can I come pick it up? Come this afternoon. So, what's going on over here? He didn't even ask me which functions I want the robot to do. So the guy starts laughing at him. Oh, you're old-fashioned. What's going on? You really think that we need to program the robot? There's a whole new system. We have a chip that we're going to attach to your head. And the robot will have an antenna on it. And the robot will simply do what you want him to do. What's the difference between the two robots? One robot is a robot that does 50 functions. The other one, even though it's a robot, but it's really human. It's an extension of the person that has that will. And therefore, Chassidus says that instead of working on all the details, that's like fighting every small war. Just conquer the main point, and then all the pockets of resistance will cave in. Why? Because simply, what's going to happen? You're going to deal with the source of all the issues. What is the source of all the issues? That you feel your ego, that you're stuck in yourself, that you have your own agenda. And that's called gassos. It's a whole other concept. And that's also the reason why Chassidus had to change the words from arrogance versus humility to gassos versus bittel. I'm sorry, yeshus versus bittel. Because because arrogance and humility are two traits of a person. Yeshus and bittel is how do I get out of me being stuck in my so-called my human box, and I raise myself a bit beyond. That's also the reason, according to Chassidus, why the Gemara says the only bad trait that the Gemara says, Ein ani v'hu yecholim lodur. I and him cannot live together. God doesn't say that, not about anger, not about laziness, and not about stinginess, not about anything. The only thing that God says it about is arrogance. God says, I cannot live with an arrogant person. Why? Why? Because that is the contradiction of the whole intention of creation. What is the whole intention of creation? Making this world a dwelling place for Hashem. What does dwelling place for Hashem mean? What does Hashem mean for anyone that learned Chassidus ever? Hashem means Einoid Milvadoi. There is nothing but Hashem. So if someone is arrogant, what happens? He's basically, that's the Lashon of the Gemara over there. Doichek raglei ashchina. He pushes away God. How does he push away God? Because God, by definition, means if he exists, I don't exist. And if I feel my existence, I, by definition, am pushing away God. If you have learned in other mamarim, how did God create the world? There was such a light that filled the whole space, says Kabbalah. What does it mean it filled all the space? Filled all the space means that there was no hypothetical possibility for creation. Why was there no hypothetical possibility for creation? Because what does it mean, light of Hashem? What does it mean, Oyre Ein Sof? Oyre Ein Sof means a revelation of Einoid Movadoi, a revelation of Atzus Hashem, of unity of God. What did God have to create? God created a place of a vacancy. Anyone remembers how that is called in Hebrew? Cholol. Cholol means a space. Says Chassidus that when a person walks around arrogant, he is then, so to say, creating a space, a void of godliness. The word Don't desecrate in Hebrew is loisa chalalu. Well, what is the meaning of the word chalalu? If you look at the root of the word chalalu, it means don't make a halal. Don't make an empty space. And if we understand that that's the whole point of Torah, if we understand that that's the whole point of creation and how are we going to fulfill that through Torah, what is the first thing that we need to have in order to receive the Torah? We need to have that bittul. We have to purge, we have to get rid of any gassos that we have, any being stuck in ourselves that we have. Because that is the prerequisite for the whole point of Torah. To the extent that Al Tareba brings over here the concept of Shiras HaKelim, and again, I don't teach over here on a regular basis, I don't know what each class learns, but Shiras HaKelim is a concept in Kabbalah where it's talking about the biggest lights. What does lights mean? Lights means revelation of godliness. But what was missing over there? Why did it shatter? It shattered because it did not have bittul. How could it be such a great light of Hashem, but it doesn't have bittul? That's the whole point. Chassidus teaches us that it could even be for very spiritual reasons. It could be for very holy reasons. But if it's arrogant, if you feel yourself over there, if you're stuck in yourself over there, that will cause destruction. You can have the most holy intention in the world, but do you feel yourself over there? Shattering of the vessels. Yeah.
Until now, I always understood this concept of the ego being the ultimate barrier between you and God's service here and the ultimate sacrifice of the ego being the head of its heart, right? But now, as you were talking about it, the ego is also divine. It's also godliness. So how...
I don't know about Akedah Sitzchak. I didn't mention Akedah Sitzchak.
No, it was just an English.
But ego is also God. No, ego, what do you mean? Hashem's ego is godliness. My ego is a contradiction to Hashem.
How can it be?
How could it be?
Nothing exists outside of God.
Right? Nothing exists outside of God. But I am my head. The only thing that could exist outside of God, even that is in God. But that is our task. Our task is to actually realize that nothing exists outside of God. But if I'm stuck in my ego, my perception then is a barrier between me and Hashem. Yeah, that's the concept of Avodah Zarah. Clearly. So let's see inside. Now I think the words will work much better. The Hagathus and the Gathus, that callousness, whose Shoyrish Kolara is the source of all evil. Ukanoida Minu Shir Sakelim, as it's known for Shir Sakelim. What is the concept of Shir Sakelim? In my humble opinion, Al Tareb is trying to say over here that Shir Sakelim was for holy things. But even in holiness, if it's about myself, if I feel myself, guys, the Maggid of Mezrich says that if a person talks, even if he talks Divrei Torah, but in the middle of talking, he feels himself, he should stop talking. It's unbelievable the way Chassidus perceives it. And sometimes people wonder, like, what's the Chiddush of Chassidus? Who says that this is the point of Chassidus? I once read an article. There was a Jew, his name was Maimon. Anyone saw his writings? But I once read, he grew up as a religious Jew in some town in Russia, and then he got married very young, and at a certain age he just abandoned his wife and kids. I don't remember even if he divorced her. And he ran to the, like, so to say, to the West, back then it was Paris, and he started writing. He became like one of the leaders of the Enlightenment movement. I don't remember exactly all the details, but you could Google it and find Maimon Maggid of Mezrich, something like that. But when he heard the Hasidic movement started, so he took a trip to Mezrich to meet the Maggid. So it's very interesting to see like an outsider, so to say, describing how a Shabbos looks by the Maggid. It's a very authentic description, right? Something when Chassidim writes something, so maybe they're exaggerating, maybe they're so all excited about it. But he came like an outsider, and he was blown away by the Maggid. But there's one line over there that is so interesting that he finishes over there, so why didn't I stay there? So he says, the reason I didn't stay there was because the Maggid demands nullification. And basically he's saying, my ego is too big in order for me to let go of my ego. But let's try to understand, why is that the point of Chassidus? Why is that the crux of Chassidus? Because the whole point of Chassidus is to reveal godliness in the world. And godliness means that nothing else exists but God. And that's the whole point of Torah too. And that's why the Ikir HaTorah, and the main point of the Torah is Leo is the Pchinas Bittel, to be nullified to God, and we're going to see what nullification means. Yeah, that's basically what our Mimer is all about. I hope we'll get there. But what is the whole idea of Torah? The whole idea of Torah is to be on a level of Bittel, the Loisachalalu. Don't desecrate. What does it mean, don't desecrate, according to Chassidus? Don't create a void. When a person that is arrogant and full of themselves walks around, yeah, you have to use some imagination and animation, right? So you could actually, like, you know, sometimes they have like these animations where they have like a flashlight shining on a person walking around. Yeah? So over here it's the opposite. Like, wherever that person walks around, he simply pushes away light of God. And this is what Chazal tell us in Eruvin Daf Nun Dal Adam Ad Aleph. In Mesim Adam Atzmoy Kemidbar. Where did the Eibush to give the Torah? Yeah? In the Midbar. The Pasuk says, in Umi Midbar Matana. And from the Midbar came this present that is called the Torah. Our weekly parasha, the giving of the Torah. Umi Midbar Matana. Why Midbar? In Mesim Adam Atzmoy Kemidbar. If a person puts himself, makes himself like a Midbar. You want to have it? Where is there any leftover still? Now you're left without one. Imesim Adam Atzmoy Kemidbar. If a person makes himself like a midbar, like a desert, Shahakol Doshim, boy, that everybody steps all over it. Upirish Rashi, and Rashi explains, She'ein Loi Gassus. He doesn't have this gassus, this callousness, this, what's the word he used? Bore? What is it? Not boastfulness. Boisterous. If a person doesn't have that boisterousness, Torah nitna lo b'matana, then he could receive the Torah. Ukamaymer, and as we say every day in davening, and sometimes I tell students, you know, we say it in davening. Say, what? If I would know that I say this in davening, I would never say that. Yeah, but what do we say every time we daven Shemoneh Esrei? We say the nafshi ka'afar la'koil tia. Let my soul be like dust, like dirt, in front of everyone. What is the next thing that we say right after the word? The azaydavke psach libi b'soira secha. And only afterwards we could ask Hashem to open our heart for Torah. Why? Because the prerequisite for Torah is, and what do you mean? You could have a lot of knowledge of Torah, but what is the point of Torah? The whole point of Torah is for you to be able to see God's perspective. When a person is stuck in themselves, everything they learn, they just take it on their own terms. Yeah? And therefore we say, V'nafshi ka'ofar l'koil tia. We ask Hashem, please help me, that I should be, my soul should be like dust in front of everyone. What does that mean? There's a famous story of a chassid that once came to his rebbe and said, I don't know, I come over here, all the chassidim push me, and there's all pushing and shoving, everybody steps all over me, he tells his rebbe. So his Rebbe answers him back and says, stop spreading yourself out so much so people won't step on you so much. Over here, it's almost the same idea, maybe from the other way around. The Nafshi Ka'afar L'Kol Tia means that I should be like dust. I shouldn't even feel when people step all over me. And the cool thing about this is that if you don't feel when people step over you, people also won't step over you. What's the point of stepping on someone who doesn't even feel that you step on him? The whole fun of stepping on someone is when the guy goes, ouch! Right? But if the guy doesn't feel, these people, they don't get stepped on. Balachein nitna al har Sinai, and that's why the Torah gave the Eibishter gave the Torah on Mount Sinai. Why? The mochich, because it's lo shu inyan ha-shiplus, that's the concept of shiplus, she'ine magbias atzmoi, that it doesn't rise so much. It doesn't rise itself, doesn't inflate itself. But over here comes a very, very important point. A lot of people, and to be honest with you, this is like one of the hard marketing, how should I call it? This is one of the hardest things to market about Chassidus Chabad. Because anyone that heard about Chassidus Chabad and read something about Chassidus Chabad knows about the concept of Bittul. But most people, you tell them, oh, you'll have to give up your ego. They freak out right away. What do you mean I'll have to give up my ego? I'm not interested. Like this layman over there. Right? He says, I can't give up my ego. And over here comes the biggest mistake, and it's a big marketing flaw, that if someone doesn't really understand what Bittul means, he could destroy the whole concept. And over here comes something brilliant that the Alter Rebbe is going to teach us, and he asks the simple question. If the whole idea of the Torah is Bittul, and that's why the Eibishter gave it on the small mountain, why didn't he give it in a valley? Why did he give it in a mountain? Why? If the whole concept is Bittul, if the whole concept is I should be like a doormat, so why did the Eibishter give it on a mountain to begin with? He gave it on a mountain that is a small mountain. You want to give it in a place that really resembles humility? You want to give it in a place that really resembles lowliness? Give it in a pit. Give it in a valley. Let's see the question inside, and then we'll try to explain the answer, because I don't think we'll have time to learn the whole Maimer inside. But you can keep a copy. Ach, ask the Alter Rebbe, ach, tzarek lov, and we have to understand, im kein, if so. If this is the whole concept of the Torah, lama hoya shum har, why was it a mountain to begin with? Sharei gam har Sinai hu har, even Mount Sinai, no matter how small it is, it's also a mountain, al kaponim. So inyan hagbah, there is also the concept of hagbah, there's also the concept of being high, that she'ena gavoyo kol kach, that it's not high, and that it's not very high. Avol, so what is the answer? Avol inyan ki be'emethim yoyshe tzarech li'yiz kalodim shapol benoid, even though that a person has to be very humble, the kolmukom tzarech is chaskos uksas hagbah, and then the Alter Rebbe goes in the Maimer to the next step and explains that real bittul doesn't mean that you are a doormat. Let's try to understand this concept and get to the bottom of what does it mean when Chabad Chassidus tells us the concept of bittul. A lot of people think that bittul means you're nothing. Who do you think you are? Bittul, you're nothing. Right? How does the story go? There's once a chassid that learned about the concept of bittul, and he went and he got a loan of $100. And when the guy came and asked him for back for his loan, so he said, "What do you mean? Which loan? Everything is nullified. Everything is bottled. There's no loan. It's all godliness. Everything is nullified." Yeah. So the guy wants him back $100. So he dragged him to the chassidish rabbi of the town, and the chassidish rabbi of the town sees what's going on over here. The guy thinks that he learned chassidish, and he thinks that he understood something, and that's why he doesn't want to give back. He wants to rip off that other guy with $100. He said, "No problem." And he calls in his helpers over there and says, "Do me a favor, take this nullified guy, get him onto a nullified table and give him some nullified lashes until he gives back the nullified loan." Yeah? What is the idea of nullification? The idea of nullification is not that I am a nothing. The idea of nullification is not that I'm a nothing. In fact, the reason why a lot of people make this mistake is because there were in the Muslim movement, there's three different factions. And one of the factions actually also uses the concept of bittul, and in order to put themselves down, they used to force themselves to do crazy things in order to completely give up on their dignity. Yeah, they would walk into, nowadays no one cares anymore, but back in the day when people were still normal, so if they used to go and walk into a pharmacy and with a straight face go over to the pharmacist and ask, "Do you please have some nails or a hammer? Do you sell these things over here?" The guy would say, "Wow, are you normal?" And then he would be so embarrassed, and that would get their ego smashed. Yeah? How does the joke go? There's once two guys sitting in the and learning Musa together and explaining to each other how they're nothing. And a guy comes in from the street and he listens to that chavrusa, so he thinks he could join. And he sits down over there and he tells them, "You know what? I'm also a nothing." So the Chavrusa tells each other, another person thinks he's nothing. Yeah? In other words, nothing is also something. In fact, and this is something unbelievable. Back in the day, the big Yetzer Hara was arrogance. Not so long ago. I would say even 60, 70 years ago. If you read books of 70 years ago, you could see people struggling with a lot of arrogance. People had crazy egos back in the day. I could give you examples. Like the example that comes to my mind is Napoleon. Napoleon was a king, and he prepared a plan for his kingdom. For how many years do you think his plan was? 1,000 years. How long do you think he was actually king? 12 years. Let's say he would have been a king for 150 years. Which sane person would prepare a plan for 1,000 years? But back in the day, ego was a major, not ego, arrogance was a major, major problem. Nowadays, the problem is not so much ego. The problem is not so much arrogance. Nowadays, it's exactly the opposite problem. Most people nowadays, including Bachrim, and including people that are trying to work on themselves, they have the opposite problem. Low self-esteem, low self-worth, low self-confidence. And why is it so much of a trickier Nefesh HaBahamis? Because back in the day, it was easier to realize that. Oh, who do you think you are? You're so full of yourself. Nowadays, how could you tell it to a person? Nowadays, you go over to a bacher and you say, who do you think you are? The bacher will tell you, I know that I'm nothing. Not only that I know that I'm nothing, he'll start telling you how he's the worst person on earth and how he did all these bad things and he's really nothing and it's impossible for him to understand that his avodah really matters and the Eibishter really cares about having a relationship with him and so on and so forth. But if someone really understands what's going on over here, the concept is not arrogant, as we said. The concept is, am I self-centered or am I God-centered? That's the question. If I am self-centered, self-centeredness has two ways of expressing itself. One way of expressing itself is by being arrogant, which is pretty outdated nowadays. Nowadays, the same ego and self-centeredness tells us that we're nothing. Yeah, you could sometimes hear a person explaining how they're really nothing and they're like the biggest nothing. And then there's like a chassidish joke that sometimes in Farbanians, when someone starts after L'chaim to say what a big nothing they are, so you're not the biggest nothing. Who says you have to be the biggest? Yeah? You have to be the biggest nothing? Well, you're a mediocre nothing. Yeah? But what is the point? What is the point of that joke? That it's simply another way of feeling myself. Feeling myself is a problem. Feeling myself is the contradiction to godliness, not the arrogance. And therefore, and I once heard from a mashpia that the Rebbe in Purim Toshin Chav, the Rebbe cried about it and said that the clip of our generation is that people walk around and saying me, and they're saying mi ani umani, who am I? What am I? I really have the ability to make a difference? I really have the ability to achieve something? Do you really think that God cares if I daven shachris or I don't? Who am I? And that's why the Alter Rebbe in this Maimer explains that I know that we chassidim talk about bittul so much. And bittul is the prerequisite and the first condition before you could receive the Torah. V'nafshi ka'afal ha'kotiyah comes before p'sach li v'soyo secha. Right! But being bittul doesn't mean that you're a valley or a doormat. Being bittul means that you're a mountain. And you're a big mountain. Only what? You're not full of yourself. In other words, bittul, if we would look for a good word for that, to express it in English, I think that those that are technical would maybe appreciate it more. Bittul means to be in sync. Bittul means where I don't feel myself so much, but I am a part of a bigger idea. Could you imagine a baseball team, or it doesn't matter, a soccer team, yeah, that they're playing together, and they constantly have to collaborate. Imagine in the middle of the game, within the same team, people would be thinking about who is going to kick the ball into the goal. They're going to destroy the whole game. Why? Because now is not the time. It's not about yourself. There's something bigger. But it doesn't mean that they're nothing. It's the opposite. They are the players of this amazing big team. Bittul means that I don't need to feel myself in order to be something. Why do we constantly get offended? Or why do we constantly do stupid things? It's all because of lack of being in touch with our real selves. When a person is healthy, do they feel their heart? Do they feel their hands? You don't feel your hearts or your hands when you're healthy. When do you start feeling your hearts or your hands? When you get a slap, yeah, or God forbid someone has some cardiac issues, that's when they start feeling their hearts. That means, and it's actually very interesting that next week in Torah R, the Alter Rebbe says, Kol HaMachla Shasamti B'Mitzrayim, he says, all the diseases, what is a disease? Says the Alter Rebbe, disease is yeshus. And if you think about it, even, I didn't think to talk about it, but if you already brought it up, even in medicine, you'll realize that every disease is a certain lack of the body being in sync with its real essence. Rahman al-Tzal, what is cancer? Cancer means that there's a certain part of the body that has its own agenda, decides that it has to grow a different way, loses touch, doesn't have bittul, is not in sync with the general idea of the life of the body that wants to live. And the same is with every psychological issue. Every psychological issue is when you get detached from your real self and you get stuck in something else. What is depression? Yeah? What is depression? I'm not talking about clinical depression. Clinical depression is something I don't know how to deal with. I'm not a psychiatrist, right? But I'm talking about regular depression. What is regular depression? Regular depression is when a person loses touch with their life, with their natural willingness, with their natural willpower to live, and instead of that, they got stuck in something. Got stuck in something happened or something, and they're completely. And the funny thing is, once they get out of that depression, they look back and say, was that a good enough reason to completely destroy my life? But why don't they see it when they're actually in the situation? It's because they're not themselves. They're detached from their real selves. That's also why you could see a lot of times people are depressed. You ask them to come, smile, dance. They'll shrug their shoulders. No, don't want. No. They're so afraid of losing that depression. Why? Because depression has a lot of feeling of self. There's a lot of self-indulgence in depression. That's also one of the major reasons why Chassidus puts such a strong emphasis on simcha. As you'll see, people that are depressed constantly want to be within themselves. People that are happy constantly want to share it with others. They're not stuck with themselves. They're like people that are dancing constantly want to get other people into the circle. It's going beyond the It's going beyond being stuck in yourself. The reason why you feel yourself, or the reason why you constantly judge yourself, or constantly think what other people think about you, what does that come from? That is a form of being stuck in self. If you really have the right self-esteem, if you really have your right self-worth, so you don't need assurance from outside. You don't need someone to constantly tell you how amazing you are. You know that you're amazing and great, so now let's do the right thing. Let's do our mission. Just like you understand that you don't feel your hands only when you get a slap. Same as if you feel yourself, something is not healthy. Healthy people are flowing. Maybe flowing would be a better word than being in sync. Flowing doesn't come from being nothing. It comes from being a real something. People that are arrogant are not necessarily more self-confident, the opposite. They're not the real something, and that's why they're lacking it. And they're constantly asking for assurance from outside. Do you ever think about it? I know it's a bit of a weird question to ask in the middle of a Chassidus class, but do you ever think about when do we say our stupidest statements ever. And when I say a stupid statement, I mean to say a statement that even if you think about it 3 months later, you cringe. I said such a statement. When do we say our stupidest statements? I don't know if you'll agree with me, but I think that we say our stupidest statements when we try to impress others. We see a group of people talking about something, and then we want to like really impress them and leave a good impression, and then we just go over to them and we say something so stupid, that's unbelievable, so ridiculous, unbelievable. Why is that so? Because really we're smart people. Really, we have so much to share with everyone. But when I'm trying to impress others, I'm not really myself. I'm feeling myself. So that's why I'm stupid, because I'm not in touch with my real self. And that is the meaning of real bittul. Meaning of real bittul doesn't mean that I'm a nothing. The opposite. I am the real something. And that is the whole point of Torah, and the whole point of Chassidus. Yeah, we are coming now from Yud Shvat. In the letter for Yud Shvat, the Rebbe, before he became Rebbe, he suggested to the Chassidim how to act in the yahrzeit of the Friedrich Rebbe. And he has over there all the regular things like Mishnayos, Tanya, giving tzedakah, and then he has, and those that have the ability to do so should go to the places of the gathering of the youth, and over there tell them how much the Friedrich Rebbe loved them and how much he hoped and trusted them that eventually they will fulfill their mission with the right passion, warmth, and chayas that the youth has. And I always wondered, like, out of all the things of the Friedrich Rebbe, the Rebbe decided that all the Chassidim should share that concept. So from a clear, like, simple marketing perspective, it's a brilliant idea. Empowerment is something that everybody talks about nowadays, right? But if you look at it from a Hasidic perspective, understand that that is the whole point of a Rebbe. That's the whole point of Chassidus. What is the whole point of Chassidus? The whole point of Chassidus is to awaken your neshama, the part of you that has the ability to receive the Torah, the part of you that has the ability to be connected with the unity of Hashem. You can't be connected if you don't understand how powerful you are. If you don't understand how much Torah trusts you, and how much Torah wants you, and how much Torah believes in you. People constantly quote Perek Mem Aleph in Tanya as being Kabbalah Soil, you better do it even if you don't understand. But if someone reads Perek Mem Aleph in Tanya with the right way, I think simply translating it, what does it say over there? It says that in Perek Mem Aleph, the Alter Rebbe says that the Eibishter that is Memala Kol Alamin and Soiviv Kol Alamin, this big Eibishter that that encompasses all the worlds and is within all the worlds, decides to leave everything and chooses that he wants you to be his servant. That is major empowerment. That doesn't mean that you're a nothing. The opposite. The big creator of the world decided to leave El Yoinim V'Tachtoinim, the upper worlds and the lower worlds, because he wants you. So could Bittul mean that I'm a nothing? Bittul doesn't mean I'm a nothing. Bittul means that I know my powers, I know my talents, I know my strength, and I decide to use that in order to be in sync with Eibishter. I decide to use that in order to fulfill God's intention in the world of revealing godliness and making the world a better place, a place of Dir Lo Yizbar V'Tachtoinim. And that is the point that is so, so important to discuss, and unfortunately weren't able to finish it inside. But the idea that Alter Rebbe says, right, the Eibishter gave the Torah on Mount Sinai. And the reason why the Eibishter gave the Torah on Mount Sinai is not only because Torah, you need to be humble. No, it's the mother of all evil is this concept of Gassus. And that's why the Eibishter wants that Bittul. But Bittul doesn't mean a valley. Bittul means that you're so in touch with yourself. You're so in touch with your neshama, your chelik elikam mal mamish. And you're so proud of it. Yeah, maybe the word pride reminds arrogance, so I don't know how to use exactly the word pride over here. Yeah, but you're so happy with it, and you're so excited about it, that you have the ability to get to let go of some stupid, egotistic definitions of yourself, of some hang-ups and issues and all these things that are only ego, and let go of that and actually fulfill your intention in creation and becoming one with the Eibishter, which is the ultimate intention of Ayeded Avaya Lahar Sinai, the Eibishter coming down on Mount Sinai and giving us the Torah because He wants to become one with us. L'chaim.